Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, again, welcome to our final segment here on Circles of Change. It's a pleasure to have two in-studio guests that I think have really shifted from being successful to doing that which truly is significant. So I welcome Charlotte and Tom Bell to the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Zara.
We're a real pleasure. Let me introduce Tom Bell. He's chairman of the board of the ZZ Cattle Corporation of Southern Arizona and also a clinical adjunct professor in the Department of Veterinary Science and Microbiology at the University of Arizona. A native Tucsonan, Tom graduated from the U of A and went on to study at Washington State University and the University of Minnesota, earning a Doctor of Veterinary Medicine and PhD in Comparative Pathology. He served as a researcher, instructor, clinical mentor, and a pathologist diagnostician. I'm pretty good at those words, aren't I? Tom also then, interesting enough, diagnosed a case of tuberculosis in a Michigan deer back in the 1990s, which led to a large cooperative effort by Midwestern veterinarians and animal scientists at a state-of-the-art $52 million diagnostic lab as a result to eradicate the disease. Charlotte Bell is a Tucson native as well, and she also went to Tucson High and the University of Arizona in animal science. She was probably best known, though, for being Miss Rodeo Arizona, as well as involved in the Tucson Rodeo. She has, in fact, a letter sweater from doing rodeo. She taught swimming lessons throughout the lives of her young children for about 20 years and also was involved in the ski patrol in both the states of Washington and Michigan. Both she and Tom, by the way, have been very involved in the snow skiing world. They worked the Olympics on subsequent occasions, and then also in Charlotte's repertoire, which you're going to hear more about, is her passion for helping others. She was involved in Habitat for Humanity and did house builds in the Philippines, in India, and also in Fiji. And it was actually taking a trip to Calcutta with the Mother Teresa organization that led them then to the journey you're going to hear about today on the show. Tom and Charlotte have been married now for over 45 years. They have three adult sons and eight grandchildren. In addition to the ZZ Cattle Corporation, a ranch founded by Tom's father, they also operate the Graham Bell Gallery of Cowboy Memorabilia in Tubac, Arizona. So as I said, our conversation is really about from success to significance journey that the Bells have been dedicated to and probably continue on. For over 10 years, they founded a school in the mountains of the Mustang region of northwestern Nepal for Tibetan refugees. It's part of the world also where they've done extensive horse trekking. Tom, if we had the chance to have Google Earth up for our radio viewers to see or get a sense of, remind us, where is Nepal?
Well, if you were in London, Zara, you could go either way, and either east or west. If you're in Tucson, you wouldn't want to go out to San Francisco, fly from there to Japan. After you leave Japan, you go to Thailand, and from Thailand, then you fly to Kathmandu, Nepal, and then from Kathmandu, Nepal, you go to a small town called Pokhara. That's actually the second biggest town, and then you take a short hop, and it's quite a dangerous one at that, in a small plane, and you land in Jomsom, and you've got a three-day horse trek to get up to where the school is.
Wow. And this is a trip you and Charlotte have taken how many times?
Well, Charlotte's been there about 11 times. I've been there 9, I believe.
Wow. So that is a tremendous amount of frequent flyer miles, visa stamps, you know, packing your own food, I would imagine, for different parts of that journey. Charlotte, take us back that first trip when you were in Calcutta with the opportunity to go into Nepal and to go view what was the prospect that would lead you on this journey to build a school.
Right. Well, Calcutta didn't have anything to do with the school, but I've always wanted, we were over doing a Habitat for Humanity build in Trichy, and we're actually building for what's called the Untouchables. I think you know it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to venture over to Calcutta. Very, very exciting. Mother Teresa is for sure a saint. She believed that nobody should die in the streets of Calcutta and or any place. And so we volunteered for the deaf and the dying, and also for the handicap, in the orphanage for the handicapped children. And what it was just the most wonderful, wonderful experience. The death and the dying, I can't even begin to explain. They had the women, men on one side, men on the women on one side, mm-hmm. men on the other. They shave their heads. They're on like a plank of wood there, and they're just so peaceful, so quiet. And obviously, I don't speak, you know, their language. Some might speak English. Most of them don't. But you just, it's very quiet. You hold their hand and just hold their hand.
That's right. Yeah. And it was your association then through the Mother Teresa's healing camps, was it not then, that ultimately led to an invitation to trek then, to take that first horseback trip up into the...
Actually, when I was doing several of the Habitat for Humanities, there was a lady that started a charity and all, and we, Tom and I, end up being on the board of directors for the charity, and she invited us to go do, she was approached, can you help us with the health camp? The first health camp actually was in Bolivia, in Cochabamba, and that was a health and a medical and a dental. Very interesting. We did the grunt work. We helped organize with all the children and get everything all set. In Nepal, that was totally different. We taught children how to brush their teeth, how to wash their hands. I know it sounds kind of silly, but it's very important.
It's fundamental.
Thousands of children die, you know, from not having washed their hands and, you know, the proper hygiene. And then we were approached while in Nepal by a couple of men from a village called Gilin in the Mustang area of Nepal to come up and see their village. And they could not read or write. They were probably about 27 years old, could not read or write. They didn't want this to happen to their children. There was a school there, and but it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. There was hardly, you wouldn't even really call it a school. So...
Yeah, it's amazing. Tom, the geopolitical situation that left us with Nepal and with the Tibetan refugees, you might want to explain a little about the history for people to get a perspective on how abject the situation was there.
Yes, probably because of the Chinese and Indian war was ongoing. They both had interest in Tibet. And when 1959 came along and the guerrillas in Tibet started rabble rousing, the Dalai Lama was forced out. When that happened, the United States got involved, and very briefly, the CIA shipped out a bunch of Tibetan refugees, trained them in Hale, Colorado to be guerrillas, and then dropped them back into Tibet. And this led to the fact that there were a large contingent of them in the Mustang area where the school was eventually built. And so you couldn't get in there. It basically was an isolated, autonomous area for which you needed a pass from the Nepalese government to enter.
And the village that you two then became associated with, if I recall, of course, I've had the pleasure to moderate a session where you shared a wonderful collection of slides from your various trips there. It was also a Buddhist monastery not too far away. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, we made very sure that everyone understood that we had no religious agenda mm-hmm. when we got there. But we did talk to the monks. The Buddhist monks were very friendly and very helpful. The only thing they said was, please don't build a school in a location higher than the monastery.
Yes, there is a hierarchy there, is there not? Charlotte, the age group that you all were touching, were you starting with some of the youngest children first?
Kindergarten, right. There was a German group, or actually a physician that actually had started the kindergarten, and we helped contribute to that too, but so young, yes, we're talking about little ones, yeah, 4 years old and up, yeah,
that's right,
5 years old.
And the time, from the time that you decided to start the school to that ceremony, it was how many years in the making?
Oh, from the first time we went over, I'll say this really quick because I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but the lady that started this organization, Random Act of Kindness, she, when we went over there, she said yes, the two of us, she said yes, well, I'll give you money. And then she came back two weeks later, she said, no, I can't do this. She said, they can't read or write, I have to account for every single penny. So I came back, told Tom, and then Tom and I took it over. So we're not going through a charity or anything, we're just, you know, we funded it ourselves.
Direct, yeah.
And
right.
We can't take anything off for our taxes either, because it's not a...
But it's true, yeah, nobody, I mean, they can't read or write. I mean, the money that that had to be paid to the carpenters, people that were helping there, had to be put in a satchel and carried by horseback in. And yeah, it's very interesting.
The other pictures, of course, that you showed to give our listeners a perspective to even get to this Mustang region. Tom, you know, take us on the horseback trip or the walking trip, or the, maybe I should call it a climbing trip, really.
It was everything.
Well, reputedly, this is the deepest canyon in the world. Mm-hmm. The Hiluhiri and Annapurna are on either side of the canyon that goes right up to where the school is built. And so for 3 days, you ride in almost darkness sometimes because the canyon is so steep, deeper than the Grand Canyon. And finally, you get to a point where you can't go on towards the school. You've got to climb out of the canyon. And that is, you remember some of the pictures, the horses like going up a long staircase for a mile or so. And we're off the horses and clambering up. We come close to 16,000 feet before we go back down to this where the school is at between 11 and 13,000 feet. And so it's quite a trip.
Well, it's quite a trip. It calls for an incredible amount of physical resilience. I mean, I can imagine just even most people, just you're listing off the number of flights and tickets and up and down you have to do, and then to know you're going to turn around and go through that exhilarating physical exercise. You know, were there other times you really had to take a break and slow down? I mean, you have to do a lot of adjustment at altitude like that.
Oh, you have to, yeah, you have to walk really slow. I mean, you can't be running up the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom and I went to Everest Base Camp, and they say you have to walk like a turtle. Yeah. Very, very small.
That would not be
steps.
Hard for me to do. I'd
very small
want
steps.
To do that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The experience of working amongst the villagers. Tom, a memorable story you'd like to tell us, and then maybe Charlotte mm-hmm. as well. Someone you really connected with that you felt, wow, they had a look into your soul, even though you might not have spoken their language.
When I first got there, walking around the village, just kind of nosing around, kids would come out of their houses and throw rocks at me.
Oh.
And they loved Charlotte. Because she would sit down on the ground and play jacks with them or bring a football or a soccer ball, really. And the kids were just in love with Charlotte. And whenever she showed up in the village over the 11 times that she's been there, everybody would come out and basically embrace her and make sure that she had everything she needed. So it was a very pleasant experience for both of us.
Well, you don't strike me as a formidable man. Were they just jealous of you? So
no,
they'd
no.
Like, stay away from our special lady?
No, I was a very strange-looking guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Occidentals
in general.
There,
right?
Yeah. That's right. How about for you, Charlotte? I mean, you've obviously seen many of these children grow up in this
community. I have. It's wonderful. It really is. And I've learned so much from being around them. I mean, they work so hard. The older people, what's so beautiful, we send our old people, our elderly, not all of us, but mm-hmm. we send them into nursing homes. And they're not, you know, the village takes care of them. You see them with children, little babies or whatever, on their back or holding their hands while the parents are out working in the fields. And it's wonderful. It really is. And everybody works hard.
In fact, you even showed that through the slides you have shared, as to how vital that relationship is between grandparent and grandchild.
Exactly.
And the love and reach out, and you can just see the vivaciousness and youth that it keeps mm-hmm. in the elderly folks
mm-hmm.
there.
Isolated as they were, we saw on the slides, although we didn't point it out, there were several children that died during the time we were there or before we got there. And it usually was an intestinal malady, like an E. coli infection. It would get dehydrated, and that would be all she wrote. We had one young lady who was a great singer in kindergarten, and she had a bad heart murmur. And it wasn't taken care of, and so she passed away.
Yeah, how would they know? The other charming story you talk about is the connection between the wildlife and the land with the people, such that their goats actually provide an automatic heating system because they sleep underneath their homes, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like Austria, but here the animals are not only the goats, but the horses, the small horses, and one thing or other, live down below, and they keep everything very clean, so it's not like you're living in a barn. And you go up the stairs, heat rises, obviously, and then right on the top of the roof, they have their storeroom. So it's a very comfortable situation. Of course, I loved, as a veterinarian, to be around the animals.
I was going to say, you're a natural there.
Yeah, so it was fun for me.
And Charlotte, you even showed a photograph or told the story how the goats come back. They've really been attended to by just one or two young person, but they know exactly where their homes are when it comes time to go back.
Early in the morning, they send them out with the, what do you call it? The
herder.
The herder. And they'll head up to the, you know, high up in the mountains, and they leave the babies behind. And at night, they come back about, what's it, about 3:30, 4 o'clock, and they all just spread out, and they all head. They know exactly which house they live in, whatever.
Which door and which house and which person.
And which person.
And they will stand right there until they're let in underneath the house, because nobody wants the snow leopard or any of the big mountain eagles to come and grab their baby goats.
Yeah, that's right. And these are Pashmina goats, those beautiful Pashmina scarves that we wear. Yeah, the long hair. Yeah, beautiful.
And so that's one of their products that they
exactly.
export. And so it's so crucial. It's just not the meat and the sanctity in that regard.
Right.
It's also
that.
And then the any grain or food product for the goats is that which they can scavenge for or raise themselves. Right.
Raise themselves.
Is not a place you can go to the store down the lane.
No.
You know, it's 3 weeks ride in to even get there.
Absolutely. And it's a short growing season, so they must really push themselves during the summer season. We've been there during the harvest, and it's a fascinating scene.
Oh, wonderful.
Everybody, including Grandma and the babies, are out in the field.
Yeah, and it's very manual work with this, probably the same kind of tools that their ancestors used.
Exactly. They use a wooden plow and animals to pull it. They grind their wheat with a water paddle, and round and round it goes, and up comes the wheat.
Yeah. So talk to us about the language challenge, because you were there, offering and giving and wanting to communicate. And Charlotte's got just such a big smile, lovely smile and twinkle in your eye about this. Something tells me you have an advantage for not speaking their native language, because you communicate in different ways then.
No, they think
exactly.
we're smart, right?
They think you're smart. Oh, my. Tom, they already knew that about Charlotte. Remember, they're throwing the rocks at you.
Yeah, right.
No, there's always a way, I think, to communicate, whether you speak the language or not. There was a gentleman that traveled with me that could speak English. But, I never really seemed to have that much of a problem.
Did it ever strike you, though, for those of us that are on the outside looking in here, that we would say you two have a tremendous amount of courage to do this? I mean, did you ever feel that this was a uncharted territory, lack of a script, having to work through paper, anything like that, or you just did it?
It was an adventure.
It was an adventure.
And that's why, we're 70, I'm 70, my husband's 71, and... it'd be nice if everybody would get out and try, don't just sit down. I mean, I love to travel, but I have to be doing something. And that's how I got started in Habitat for Humanity. I mean, there are a lot of things you can do, adventurous like this.
All the days of hiking and horsebacking would really make you peaceful and very much thinking about what's important in your life. And when you got back, you felt like, obviously you had more hemoglobin than when you left.
Right.
And secondly, you had the feeling that, oh my gosh, that was such an experience. I'm so lucky to live where I live.
That's true. And then also that you truly had an impact on other people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we recently, in fact, just last weekend, we had Ken Budd on the show. He wrote the book, The Voluntourist. And so I wouldn't put you two in the volunteer tourist role, because what you've done or been dedicated to is something as sustainable as take you years to build. If I recall also, Charlotte, what your work has done has inspired others to come to that village and build other facilities, hasn't it?
Exactly. It was like planting a seed. Right after we finished the village, there was a couple trekking through from India, and they end up building. They fell in love with the school, and they end up building a hostel because they could see the need for it. So now we're housing other children from other villages, and I mean some of them live like 8 hours away or whatever.
Oh my.
So they're coming in and they're staying. And then we had a couple coming in, a father and a daughter from Colorado that were trekking through. They saw the school. We have a really nice library, but hardly any library books. Everything has to be carried in on your back, on the horse, on a mule, whatever. And so the following summer, they hired a helicopter and chartered a helicopter and flew all these books into our village.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's just, and then there's a couple right now, young 20s, and from Australia. And they're having huge fundraisers in their building. They just finished building, the headquarters for, the teachers and all.
And also bedrooms for the young ladies.
Yeah.
So that they can live separately from the young boys.
Young boys. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some things that transcend any language or any culture. I would say probably the two are music and sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I know sports plays a big part in your school, doesn't it? You mentioned foosball and the gifting of Nike of special backpacks.
Nike has been just wonderful, wonderful. Ever since I started going to Nepal, I would Nike would give me like 400 little backpacks, little string backpacks, not the fancy ones, the nylon, and then soccer balls. Every time I go, I bring soccer balls. And then we help host one of their first soccer tournament, and these were villagers that came from like 10 different villages, and it was just amazing. It was just wonderful.
And Sharon had the idea to support the youth group in the village, which caused other villages to say, well, how did you do this? And now they all get together. How many teams did we have last time?
Well, about 10, 10,
about
11,
10 from different villages. Right. They're all competing and talking to each other.
Yeah, that idea that you put a pebble in the ocean, you know, and it's going to ripple across.
Yes, yeah.
The teachers then, were they natives of the village that then grew up through the ranks, or they came from other places?
They came from Pokhara, from Nepal.
Okay.
Yeah. And from Tibet.
Yeah, Tibet.
Yeah, Tenzin's brother, who was one of the main teachers to teach the mm-hmm. Tibetan language. See, these kids have to learn the Tibetan script, the Nepalese script, and English letters. And they have to be able to read and understand those languages.
That's great.
It's come a long, long way.
And the type of food and diet that you enjoyed or learned to cope with, however we would say it, or became acclimated to, Charlotte? What was the food like there?
It was good, delicious. Lots of rice, dal bhat, vegetables. What else would Tom?
Homegrown greens are
lots
very,
of homegrown
very popular.
Greens, yeah.
So there you can
if you don't like dal bhat, you ain't going to eat.
And dal bhat is a meat.
A meat product. Sauce on rice with fresh vegetables, mountain vegetables.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, the idea, this horse riding in the Himalayas, you know, my feeling is that would be the subtitle for this segment we've just had, because truly the personal growth and the opportunity you both have enjoyed. When's your next trip back? Do you have one scheduled?
Probably next summer.
Next summer. That's right.
Right.
Well, wonderful. Well, any of our listeners that would be interested in learning more, you can contact Tom?
Sure. We've got an email, which is really nice. I'll be happy to give it.
Or contact the Graham Bell Gallery.
Graham Bell Gallery in Tubac. Yeah, but the email is really easy. It's Tom. Char for Charlotte, CHARBELL at MSN.com.
Terrific. Well, we thank you on behalf, I'm sure, countless people that wouldn't even know how to say thank you to you, but the inspiration and knowing of making a difference going from success to significance is really profound. Thank you so much for contributing today.
Thank you
for having us.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.